moi consent. Sinon, change.
Hello, it's Milton Christian.
It's got to be perfect. It's got to be worth it. Yeah. Do let
it. Hi, everyone. That was extremely good dancing, as far as I can see. Our audience is thankfully deprived of us shaking our hands around during the introduction song. We are a trifecta again today, which is just a complete thrill for us. And of course, I'm with Fred De Vries and Gary Rathbone. Hi, everyone. How are you doing?
Hello, Tim. Shall I tell who Gary is?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've known Gary for about 18, 16, 17 years. He was a good friend of South African Americana singer-songwriter Jim Neversink. And I think we met at a party that was thrown for Jim when he was leaving the country or releasing an album or something like that. And I didn't know Gary at all, but he turned out a really cool guy with an immaculate musical taste. One of the five people in the country who was also mad about the Triffids, like me. And we bonded, and through the years we've kept seeing each other. When Gary was working in Kenya as a sports media consultant, I remember well, we visited him there, and he's had a brilliant career as a journalist and sports media man. I think he's the founder of, what's it called?
Sportscape Media.
Sportscape Media, that's right. But he's here not with that hat on his head. He's here as a musician, because Gary, in the meantime, also played in a number of bands. I guess he started with the Aeroplanes, who released one album on Shifty Records. He was in another band called What Colors. And then his most famous band was called The Spectres. And then he was quiet for a while. But now he's about to release, or has just released, a new album. Tell us about that, Gary.
Thanks very much, Fred. Yeah, it has been quiet for a while because I was busy with getting a job and a career. Because as anybody knows, trying to make a living out of being a musician anywhere, not even in this country, but anywhere, it's not that easy. So especially if you're trying to raise a family and all that sort of thing. So it's been a focus on that for me. And then I've got to a point in my life where I needed to get back to my music. And I've been writing all this time over the past, since The Spectres and all of that, I've continued to write and record stuff. And I just thought now time to start putting everything together and creating the space again to get back to being myself again as a musician. So I put together an album, and fortunately, Just Music have just signed me up as an act on their label, and which we're releasing through them. And it's great to have my first solo album. So this is at the age of 63.
What's it called?
It's called Where We End Is Where We Begin. And okay. I've gone for that because I think that it has this kind of psychical feel, in a sense that am I at the end of my career, or am I at the beginning of my music career, or is the end a new beginning, or whatever the case, all those kinds of questions kind of springs from that idea of that. It feels weird in a way to be almost starting again at the age of 63 with a new setup and a new debut solo album. But it's fantastic, to be honest with you. I'm really excited about this. We're putting a band together. I've got some great musicians in the band. I've got Andrew Cleland and Andrew Joseph in the rhythm section, which is really going to make a big difference to the live sound. And looking forward to getting the official launch out. The first single, Missed Opportunity, will be out in the next week or so. The video should also be out in the next week. It has been finished and everything like that, but it'll be ready for formal release in about a week or so as well. So, yeah, people could look out for that.
Now you're 63, and you chose today's theme was the perfect song for seducing someone, a girl or a boy, on the couch. Now, tell me, how did you come to that theme?
there's a couple of things. I think, firstly, thanks to J.D. Vance, sofas have been in the news. You know, seducing sofas have been in the news lately, basically, to a degree. But I also think as well is that in relationships, the idea of it is seduction in the terms of with someone that you love, bringing sexy back, I would say, into a relationship. The idea that maybe in a relationship, one gets to a comfortable place, instead of spending the time on the sofa sort of watching TV, sometimes you want to say, let's switch off the TV, dear, and put on some Isaac Hayes and really get to get that loving feeling going again, basically. You know, seduction, you make an effort, basically, to reach out to somebody in a way that shows that you actually care, that you really have a strong feeling from to reaffirm a commitment or whatever that is. It's a good thing. And I think that we need to be careful of not losing the art of that element of seduction in our lives and not get into too comfortable a zone in relationships. And as I said, it's good to keep sexy going in your relationship. And I think that some of the songs I've chosen would reflect that opportunity to do that.
Gary, you won't know this, but Fred and I have just done one of these programs on kissing. So we're quite worried that the people are going to think that we're a bunch of old geeks pining after our younger days. Slightly creepy. Can I just say, I actually like the idea of music and seduction. And I so enjoy doing our program on kissing too, because that's really what music is there for. It's there to, exactly, as a sort of connection. It's there to take you to places where, you know, to transport you in a way. And any music can do that. I don't know. Some people, yeah. Fred obviously rests on the couch with a poetry book and all of his girlfriends are astounded. Yeah. Okay. With that, let's listen to the first track. This is Fred's choice. Bumping down the line. Hear my whistle blowing. Hear my engine whine. Hear me from your pillow. Okay, Fred, obviously the person that you're on the couch with, as Gary has said, has got biker boots on, leathers.
Let me tell you, this is Dirty Diesel by Paul Westerberg. He used to be the singer and songwriter for The Replacements, and this is from one of his solo albums. There's a little story behind this. When I started dating Joanne a number of years ago, who's my current partner, we always wanted to have a song that was our song and a romantic song that, yeah, could lead to seduction, etc. And her favorite was always the Jayhawks with a song called I'm Gonna Make You Love Me and We're Gonna Be Around Together for a Million Years or something was the lyrics. And one day this song came up on our CD player sitting on the couch. And I said, this is going to be our song. I'm a Dirty Diesel. And so it's unofficially became our song. It's a great song. And it's about I'm a Dirty Diesel pumping down the line. Used to be a bad boy. Hear my engine whine. The metaphor is pretty obvious. And but it's, as you say, it's biker boots more than elegant shoes. But I thought it's also a bit of making fun of the theme in a way. Because three guys in their 60s, you can't be too serious about this. So Dirty Diesel, that's what we are, Dirty Diesels.
I think it works very well, Fred, for the thing. You know what I mean? Exactly that. They're not going to be either the same for everybody. And it's a different kind of person that you're looking to, what you're trying to say and who you're trying to say it to, basically. And knowing you and your taste, certainly in music, I think it's very Fred DeVries as a choice, for sure.
It does have a nice sort of sleazy feel to it, doesn't it? It's got that sort of Rolling Stonesy. It's not an unsexy song, let's put it that way.
It ticked every box that I made.
And did Joanne like it? Did Joanne say that she, ooh, did she accept the designation?
At first she was shocked. But now it has become our song, even though she will never admit it. Yeah. But she likes it. Yeah, she likes it.
Could you not?
It was a bit overwhelming because it was early in our relationship, and she thought, Jesus, if that's going to be our signature song, then might look somewhere else for the million years that we're going to love each other. Anyway, yeah.
That's great.
All right, let's move on. This is now slightly different, I would say, marginally different. Gareth, this is the most known, tried and tested. If this fails, if you're on the couch and you put this on and this fails, then you are in deep trouble.
Absolutely. This, as you say, it's one of the most obvious kind of things for this theme. But I'm also keeping in mind what Fred said earlier on as well. A couple of blokes in the 60s, we can't get too serious about these things. And it is, without a doubt, possibly also the cheesiest type of seductive thing you could ever put on, and you'd think that if I did try it with certain partners, they might like look at you a bit askew and say, "Are you serious, mate?" but it is just such a. It does. Certainly, I've always loved French pop, and I'm a huge Serge Gainsbourg fan, and I think that it's something that I remember when I first heard it as a kid. I was quite young then, and it was like it was quite astonishing. The idea of it as a song, as a structure, as an idea. We've had a lot of songs that have gone on to do this Love to Love You Baby with the Donna Summers thing, where it just works into a groove and gets a feeling and going. So there's a couple of songs that work in that way. It really just breaks a lot of the bounds of what a traditional pop song should be. At the same time, is being something that's really obviously meant to titillate.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's interesting. It is obvious in a lot of ways, but it's also historic, as you point out, because this was one of the first pop songs that really introduced sex in a very direct way into pop music. Mm. And it was part of the sexual revolution at of the time. There's a lot more to it, actually, and it broke all kinds of taboos. I also think musically, it's very underestimated, because capturing that seductive mood, it is slightly enhanced by people breathing heavily.
Yeah.
But also, it's more than that.
It's also a very ambivalent song. Je t'aime, moi non plus means I love you, me neither, which is a very strange title for a song. And I translated the Serge Gainsbourg biography from English into Dutch. So you get to know the guy very well.
Wow.
And he also said it is a song, it's the anti-fuck song. It's a song about desperation and the impossibility of physical love. So it's exactly not what you wanted, Gary.
Yeah, no, maybe it's not exactly what Serge Gainsbourg wanted, but I think it's pretty much what I wanted, because I think that the way that people respond to it is, you know what I mean, is it does tick a few boxes. And I think
people don't so think about the title, do they?
I think most people would. Exactly. Most people wouldn't have picked that up. They just hear that organ and they hear Serge Gainsbourg down and dirty, and then Jane Birkin on the top there's like panting away, and it's just that's all they'll know, basically.
You wrote it for Brigitte Bardot, initially.
That's right. I believe that was originally written for Bardot, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is part of the reason why I don't believe him. I don't believe him for one instant that he's
I think I'm going to go with Tim on this one, actually. I think that...
I think what he means is that physical love and spiritual love don't go together so well. So this is, it's a song about fucking, basically, isn't it?
Yes.
But the love bit in the physical doesn't exist for him. That's, I think, what he means.
But essentially, that thing about the sort of the two elements of love and thing and that you can get, and it's one of the things I was thinking about on the topic ahead of this conversation, is that thing about desire. I mean, desire is an important element of life in every way. It's a primary driving force for so many things, and I think that desire in this context as well, there's two sides of it, and it can actually be problematic and the issues that can come with it. But when within the space of love, basically, desire becomes quite an incredibly wonderful, beautiful thing. Something we should always attain, we should always aim for and have as a driving force in our lives, but to ensure that we always make sure we manage it within boundaries of love, basically, rather than it becomes cynical or coercive or Machiavellian almost in a way.
Complicate this. I remember when the song came out, dancing to it, and honestly, there was no feeling just greater. Honestly, it was just fabulous because somebody at the party at some point would smash this thing on, and it was just fabulous. It was just like a sort of a wash came over you. And more importantly, women also liked it. It was it was a kind of introduction to intimacy, a very obvious one in a way. And because it was obvious, it worked.
Mm. Yeah, and it was done with taste, I think. It's not a...
It is clever. It is clever, as Tim, as you were saying earlier on, the way it does break down a lot of the traditional pop forms, and it breaks the mold of a lot of things, and the way it's very different. So it is clever as well. I think we as you said earlier on,
and it's a good song as a song goes. Yeah. It's got many hooks.
Going back to what you were saying, is that what basically why it works is because you get Serge Gainsbourg and Jane Birkin to say for you what you can't actually say to your partner. Basically, you put that on and it says it all. Where are you going to go from there?
All right, let's move on. By some criteria, that could be the cheesiest seduction song in history. But I also have a cheesy offering, which is, you know, I would say is head-to-head cheesy. And it is this.
Nights in white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always missed with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you.
That's Nights in White Satin. For people who don't know, it was a Moody Blues song, came out long, long time ago. It's
the same time as Je T'aime, because
very much, and it's in the same mode. You know what's interesting about it to me was that it was written by Justin Hayward. He wrote it when he was 19, which is, I think, extraordinary for such a well formulated song. And it was, the song title came from the fact that his girlfriend gave him some satin bed sheets, which I guess a nice indication of how the song got its feel and everything. And there's a lot of kind of build and orchestration in it. But also, I think it was maybe had more of a lifeline, because it's in some ways like Je T'aime. So it's a bit of a contradictory song in its lyrics and its style. Anyway, I've always liked the song. I thought it was really quite an extraordinary
song. I think it's an excellent song, and it's really of its time, and as we were saying earlier on, it really is one of those songs that breaks through and starts being very explicit in what it talks about, and it makes a huge impact. And talking about at parties, it's one of those songs that you usually at the end of the last dance, basically, at the disco, and that was the opportunity to get to grapple with the person you've been eyeing up all evening and wanting to get the dance with, and that's what you're going to.
And then somebody else got there first.
You get you say, "Would you like to dance with me?" No, okay, right, fine. That's well. But also in the Moody Blues, I'll just say this, is that in many ways, I would say, unspoken key references to what I do musically for a long time. I don't actually maybe acknowledge them much as I should in some ways, but I've always loved the sound and I've loved the songwriting. That, you know, I play a lot with orchestral arrangements and things like that in my own stuff that I do, bits and pieces of orchestration. And a lot of that comes from that moody blues sound and the way they used the organ and their guitar sound and chord structures as well were very, I think it's been a big influence on me in many ways, actually. But I don't acknowledge that too much because maybe that's not as cool for a lot of people these days.
This was actually, I think, the first album where a pop band used an orchestra. Because they played with the London Festival Orchestra, and some people called it the first progressive album ever.
Fred, you would know.
In our book, we wrote a book about progressive rock. We didn't. We mentioned it, but I don't think it was progressive in that sense. But they were ahead of their time. And then they went into the what do you call that other instrument? It's sort of imitated orchestras.
The mellotron was like, yes. God, I love
push
the
key and you had a half an orchestra in one key.
Yeah, but I love the mellotron.
Yeah,
but I love that weirdness of it. It just sounded so surreal and worked very well with the kind of psychedelic sound that came out shortly thereafter. That was evolving. So like an orchestra on acid.
Yeah, there is an aspect of the earliest part of psychedelic rock in the song too, and in the moody blues in general, which I thought was quite interesting. And I don't know enough about music to know what this means, but the song also had a very unusual chord structure, and it used this thing called the Neapolitan chord. It wasn't an unsophisticated structured song. You can hear that, it's the way it builds very carefully. Anyway, okay, let's move on. This is Fred's Second Choice.
Did you love a girl right? You wanna make lovers rock? You must know a place you can't kiss. Make lovers rock. Everybody knows it's a crying shame, but nobody knows the boss, baby's name, but she forgot that thing that she had, to swallow, you Western man, you're free with your seed, when you make lovers rock, but once that goes, the strength that you need, make real cool lovers rock.
Fred, Lovers Rock by Clash. We still got the boots on the
cover.
We haven't moved from that theme.
I think Fred likes to make his moves on the dance floor before he gets to the sofa, obviously.
I chose this because of the lyrics. You must treat your lover girl right if you want to make Lovers Rock. I thought it was quite if you are with somebody and you play this, he or she will think, oh, okay. That's quite nice. But then I started reading about the lyrics. I don't so listen to lyrics as some of you do. And it turns out it was a song about the pill. There's one phrase that goes, you Western men, we just heard it. You Western men, you're free with your seat when you make lovers rock. But whoops, there goes the strength you need to make real cool lovers rock. So it's about sex, but also about being careful with sex. And it was written, I think, somewhere late 70s, early 80s, late 70s. It's from London Calling.
Yeah.
And it was also a bit of a send-up, I read somewhere else, of the sort of macho Jamaican, that a genre called lovers rock. But there it was very macho and you make the girl pregnant, etc. And it was a bit of a making fun of that or an answer to that. And it's a song to make you think a bit more in a way. And the Clash always had that preachy element to them. And this was, I think Joe Strummer wrote this one. But it's also quite a nice funky song. If you sit there on the couch, it's, could get you moving.
Yeah. The thing I always loved about the Clash is how pared down they are. And they're playing fun melodies with the great feel and enthusiasm vibe and without too much ornamentation. And it just comes across really well. I love the way they integrated punk and rock. Not really integrated, but they were always more punk than rock. But still, they wanted to go back to basics. And when I listen to them now, I do think, wow, it'd be nice to go back to that. It was a guitar, bass, and the drums, and then you make some noise.
I disagree with you. I think they were much more a rock band than a punk band, to be honest. They grew up on rock music.
I mean, I agree with you on that completely, Fred. And the first album, the punk still spots were on the first album. But as you say, they evolve into becoming an excellent rock band. But I think what's common across all of that, and what I think makes the song quite a nice choice, because again, the theme is that we're talking about all the songs we've come across so far have something about them. They might seem a bit cheesy and obvious, but there's a lot of depth to them. And I think the Clash were very good at that. The Clash were a band that made people think. And I think that's always a good thing. And that's what music should do, is to challenge perceptions. I think maybe we're talking about here is about obviously music that makes you feel, but it's good that music that makes you feel, that makes you think at the same time.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah. Now the Clash were very, and also you must see it in the time. This was late 70s. This is almost 50 years ago. Things were different. People thought differently as well.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
All right. Let's move on. Gary, this is your second choice.
Hey, sexy. My lovely lady. No one can make me feel as good as you do. Your action produces satisfaction. You let me know what you feel and by the way that you move. A lot of sweet talk is secondhand. Cause the language that you speak, I can understand.
All right, Gary, this is Body Language. It's extraordinary how that voice is just...
And it really hinges exactly on Isaac Hayes' voice. You get that groove, that funky guitar at the beginning and that vibe, and then suddenly his voice kicks in, and there's no ambiguity about this at all, basically. It's straight four on the floor, just dripping sex and desire. But it's what funk was all about and soul was all about back then. What they call R&B these days, it's a very different thing to what I understood R&B and funk to be about back in those days. And I love the sound, basically, and I still do. If you listen to this as well, what I like about the song, I mean, the arrangements in it and the vibe, I love rhythm. I think rhythm is such an important part. Groove is such an important part of good music, of music that I like. And I think that really comes together, and you stick a voice on like that, it just blows everything away. I think that more and more people should get back to listening to Isaac Hayes and that kind of sound again, because I think it comes from a good place. They're great songs. They're not talking about random sex or whatever like that. This is sex in love, basically. And it's strong, it's powerful, and it's hard to beat that.
Him and Barry White were the main guys.
Yeah, Barry White, yeah. But I think Isaac Hayes to me has got more of an edge to Barry White in a way. Barry White was a bit too...
Yeah, I think so too.
I like Hayes is more funkier. He's a Stax artist, and I'm a much... On the soul and the whole, that whole sound is a big influence in my life musically. And I've always been more towards the Stax sound than the Motown sound. Motown is that sharper, sharp pop, much more brighter and pointed, whereas it seems to be a much deeper... thing from what we got from Stax, basically.
But in the competition between Barry White and Isaac Hayes, I think you have to, I don't know, I go with Isaac Hayes. One of them is because even though he had this great voice, just as a sort of demonstration of it, his best, most well-known single, I think, was an instrumental. It was the theme from Shaft.
Yeah, of course.
He sings on it.
He does sing on it, but basically.
He does sing on it, he does sing on it. Who's that man? Yeah. Shaft.
He was also quite political. Barry White was. It was all about the ladies. And Isaac Hayes, he had covers of his albums in chains, a reference.
Yeah, Black Moses was one of his albums. His album after Chocolate Chip, actually, was Hot Buttered Soul, which also gave you a sense of where things were going. Then Chocolate Chip, and then Black. It might have been the other way. He was the lovers. He was a thinking thinking man. He's a lover's thinking person kind of thing. And I suppose he's not 1,000 miles away from where we were with The Clash, basically, in that respect.
And Gary, have you written any seduction songs for your new album?
Have I written any seduction songs for my new album? No, because I haven't been doing much seducing over the last few years, basically. And the songs are written over the last period of time. There's a couple of breakup songs on there, but no, I don't think I've got a seduction song. But I think I need to go there. It's a very good question, and I certainly wouldn't think of any of the sort of pickup lines I may have used in my old days, night clubs and things, and when I was playing in bands back in the 80s, because they were pretty disastrous, and it makes them the cheesiest thing look like they're actually a cordon bleu meals. But so I think in many ways is that I couldn't think of anything original to say. Because I think a lot of it, if it's all been said, it's a very narrow bandwidth. So I think the key thing to make it work would be not so much what I would choose to say, but how I would choose to say it and set it. And I think that when it goes, the two things, and I think there's two songs, if I think about what we've listened to so far, the elements is the groove that Hayes has, and then the orchestral, the sound dynamics of a Nights in White Satin. I think those two elements are somewhere in between there. Because I think that's why Isaac Hayes works. Isaac Hayes was actually just singing the phone book over that groove. You'd still actually feel like turned on. And I think that
the groove is important. Very important.
And that voice. And then you put that voice in, it's...
Yeah, it's irresistible. You know what I think is true of a lot of different types of song, of course, but what you do want is you want that transportative quality. I always think it's like a drug, the attraction. There's something non-voluntary about it. Because you're just drawn. You're often against your better instincts, and the music's got to touch that somehow.
Actually, music nailed it with Love is the Drug.
Exactly. Yeah, no, that's exactly the song I was thinking about. And strange enough, this song, I think, does that. That's Chris Isaac with Wicked Game, of course. It's got a lot of elements of all of the songs that we've been talking about so far, plus one little thing, and that is the kind of illicit quality and maybe the kind of your sense that sometimes seduction is not in your own best interests. Chris Isaac is a complete one-hit wonder, but wow, what a one-hit to be wonderful with. He said that he wrote the song after he got a phone call from a woman he didn't know who wanted to have a hookup with him. So he thought of this idea about writing a song about having a relationship with somebody it's not necessarily a sensible thing to do. But it does have that seductive quality, and I love the guitar lead. It's very penetrating and soulful, deep. I know it's also a bit of a cliche song, but it's one of those cliches I can live with.
It's a great.
Did you notice, Tim, that?
But Tim, you know what you're saying. The thing about it is what I said earlier about that. The song seduction to those elements, the groove and the sound and things like that. And it has that. He's got a voice as well. It's not an Isaac Hayes voice. It's a different kind of voice, different kind of element at play there. But it still is very, as you say, soulful, very stirring. And that rhythm has this really nice kind of like smoothness about it. And at the same time, it's got a nice sort of bit of a dangerous edge to it as well, which is what the guitar adds to it. So it's a really nice mix. And it just shows you how it's those elements, it's almost the sound, before you even get to the words, is where it all starts with, basically.
I think it's a cuddle up song, isn't it? You sit next to each other, you hear that song, and you get a bit closer. You get a bit more
exactly.
intimate.
Exactly. I definitely one that'll get the juices flowing.
Yeah, there's a lot in the delivery too, because his voice has got that little longing edge, which sort of helps make the song. Anyway, okay, let's move on. This is Fred's final. Fred, talk to the song.
This is Suicide, the band Suicide. And the song is called Diamonds, Fur Coat, Champagne. We heard them before, I think, in one of our podcasts. They were a duo from New York, mid-70s, pioneering with electronic sounds when nobody else was doing it. But I chose the song because I was once seduced by somebody playing Suicide. It was a girl in, I think, she was, they had every album, they only made two real albums, but both albums had one really slow song on it. And there was one called Cherie, and the other one I forgot. And so I was visiting this girl, and then she turned off the lights, and then Cherie was played on her, I think, turntable player. And it was obviously a very seductive song. And I thought it's nice to see that from a girl's point of view, it also works, this kind of thing, of course. It's not a male thing necessarily. But I love this song. It's like decadent, and it's you need to be under the influence of something for this song to work. In the second line, he already mentions cocaine, and then there's melodies, Speed Away, Blaze of Light, and later on there's Candlelights as well. So it's very much, it's not about romance. That's very obvious. It's about something else. I'm not sure if it's a couch song. It might be a couch song. It's not the first. You have to get into the thing a bit before you play this song.
The music is very couchy, but I have to say, for you, Fred, this is very materialistic. Diamonds, fur coats, and champagne. That's a kind of seduction.
And a Cadillac and cocaine.
Yeah, it does work. It's no, I'm not. You shouldn't put it down. It's not all about...
That's 80s checklist, you know, right there, basically.
yes, exactly.
I love the decadence of it. It's a decadent song, isn't it? It's like dream world. And I like that. It takes you to a different place.
Suicide were a brilliant band, exactly as you said, that they're experimenting with electronic at an early stage. It was Martin Rev and Alan Vega, I think, are the two of them. And they were a band I really loved. And I do think that to me, it has a sexiness about that in an electronic way, basically, that we probably take for granted more and more later on. That they're really pushing sexy into electronica in a way, which is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And it was influential later, because electronica's always been there. More about this than I do, Fred, but I do think that there was that people had to go through an accustomation process or something in order to really enjoy electronica. You can't really see that in modern music because it's so accepted. Nobody even raises an eyebrow.
Guitars are out then, now.
Yeah, no, but now it's completely part of
it. It was revolutionary. They were the support act of the Clash, I think, when they played in the UK, and they were pelted with whatever they could find because they so didn't fit. They were promoted as a punk band, but more punk as in attitude than in three chords. And
you only had one chord actually. Suicide. Yes. Minimalist.
They were very minimalist. Yeah, and people didn't understand it. And
three chords, decadence. So
yes. So no big Dr. Martens this time, Tim.
No,
these are high heels. Yeah. High heels with little diamonds.
No, precisely. All right, Gary Lawson. This is obviously David Bowie and Wild as the Wind.
Yeah, for me, this actually, when you first came with the idea of being on the podcast and the topic, I know Isaac Hayes is at the center of the effect that I think is key, but this song was the thing that sparked a thing in me, basically, the idea of it, because I think that it's an incredibly beautiful song, and it's probably one of Bowie's best vocal performances. And so the song, there's parts towards the end where Dottie does these voices and the way it goes, it's absolutely sublime. And it's, in some ways, I find the song to be seductive, not only in a romantic sense, but actually in an artistic and in a musical sense. It just draws you in a way that is just find quite compelling. And also listening to Station recently and realizing that when one thinks of Bowie and his genre and the different people that he's been in that space, and if you're thinking of romance with Bowie, you could think of maybe things from Aladdin Sane or even Young Americans and things like that. But actually, if you listen to Station to Station, is one of his most romantic albums by far. It's got some Stay is a brilliant love song as well. It's this thing that I think of that song, and so many times I've been in that situation. When Stay, that's what I meant to say, Stay. And I didn't say it. And think, and it articulates romance in a way that is extraordinary on an album. But why it triggered it for me is because I remember a particular incident years and years ago when I was living on the rooftop of a building in Yeovil. And I remember a girl coming around for a date coming out to my little quarters thing that we were living in at the time, my little old room, my turntable there, and coming in, and then I'd put on Station to Station, and she like walked in the stop and said, "Okay, you're trying to seduce me, aren't you?" And I said, "No, heavens,
I thought, surely not.
Of course I was lying. You know what I mean? Of course I was trying to, the lights were down, I had candles on and everything like that. She said, it's one thing on this guy's mind, and it was so very clear. And it's always struck me that I did think of it as a seductive romantic album at the time, but I didn't realize it's over years of still listening to it, what a powerfully romantic and seductive album it is. And particularly the songs on it. And Wild as the Wind is just a most incredible, powerful love song. Yeah. And I think it's something, again, like the songs that I think we've chosen here, in my search, certainly, it's not just about seducing left, right, and center. It's really about seduction and love. You know what I mean? It's a really heartfelt lament, a message to someone you really have deep feelings for. But at the same time, you don't want to just sigh and look into the eyes. You actually do want to actually get naked together at some point.
It's an interesting song in a different way. It's just incredible how many artists have pounced on this song. I don't know which is the most covered of Bowie songs, but Nina Simone did a fantastic version. Randy Crawford did a version. George Michael did a version. He just nailed it on the song, I think. Mm-hmm. Bowie. It's got that character that I so like in seduction songs, which is an element of detachment and involuntarism. That you just get this image of the wind blowing the tree and yourself and you and your emotions around. Yeah. It's just all incorporated. Yeah,
I never knew that he didn't write that song. I never realized that it was a cover. It was written by Dimitri Chumkin and Ned Washington for the 1957 film Wild is the Wind. The song has been recorded many times.
Jesus, that's why we've got an expert in the room.
Nina Simone in 66, David Bowie in 76, George Michael in 99. Yeah. So we always learn when we do these programs. Well,
that is an education for me. But it is a seductive song for sure, because musically it's seductive. Yes. And it doesn't take away from me the arrangement and to me the strength of that is Bowie's vocal. As I said, I think it's one of his greatest
vocal
performance, basically. Yeah. And it really stands out for me, and the way he sings it, and really speaks to me.
No, it's an excellent choice.
Is king, crown you in my heart. Your love is king. Now we need to part. Your kisses ring round and round and round my head, touching the very part of me. It's making my soul sing, tearing the very heart of me. I'm crying out for more. Your love is king. Crown.
All right, this is Sade, Your Love is King, of course. This is my attempt to try and think about seduction from a woman's point of view. And I just think if you are a woman and you're trying to seduce a guy, this might be one of your choices. It's difficult to put yourself in the shoes of the opposite sex. The giveaway here is the sax. It's just that beautiful sax line and the very smooth beat. There's one little interesting musical thing about this song. It's in 12/8 time, which I think is very unusual, but actually very appropriate for a seduction song. Very soft beat, nothing, no four on the floor here, baby. So, Fred, you don't like the song at all, I presume?
No, not much.
I
remember Sade. And I thought it was all a bit too smooth and too, I don't mind it, but it doesn't do it for me. Let's put it that way.
Tim, you are talking about someone who got the Clash and Suicide on his seduction list. There's no surprises in Fred's. And I think I'd probably fit in between the two things in this sense. I mean, I think it was a great pop song. I mean, Sade's catalogue, the money she made out of it, she's one of the most extraordinarily successful artists of the 80s and 90s. And I think it's still selling in bucket loads, those songs of hers. So she really struck a chord with what she was doing, and she got something really right, and it works. But one of the things I was thinking, because Fred's mentioned it as well, is that you're talking about the way that maybe the woman would see it one way about seduction and men would other or whatever. And I must say that, and I think about that, is that I don't really think that there's any real difference between the way that men and women see these things. And if we go back to Wild as the Wind, and we didn't think about it, I thought it was a Bowie song, but realizing that it wasn't, and that Nina Simone sung it basically, as well as before Bowie, and the seductive romantic aspects of that song cut across gender completely. And I think that generally what turns people on, men and women, is pretty much we have very similar kind of buttons that kind of work together. We're not that different. You know what I mean? There are obviously some things, but I think generally, you know, there's a kind of common humanity in these processes that kind of, you know, we're all pretty much just...
Yeah, that's just true. I can understand. When I was talking about this to my wife, she said that the one thing that you don't want to do if you're trying to seduce a woman is put on a female vocalist. She said, you've got to have the guy, which I thought was an interesting comment.
Yeah, that is a very interesting comment.
Maybe it works the other way around. You know what I mean? If you're the girl trying to seduce the guy.
What I like about the choice is that you have to go into somebody else's mind as well. It's not like you think, this is for me the best seduction song. You got to think, you know, the other person, will he or she like it? And how will he or she respond, etc. It's not a one-way. If it's a one-way thing, it won't work anyway. Because then it's a dead end street. I just saw that Sade made an album called Lover's Rock in 2000.
Yes, yeah. Did you not know that?
We come full circle here.
There you go. It's good when we have a theme and everything just comes together. It's like we planned it.
All right, so this is now the difficult part of our discussion, which is out of these songs or others, which do you like the most? Any initial offers in this process?
First, do we drop one, right?
Yes.
I drop one of our own. One of our own. I'll drop Lover's Rock.
Okay, and I'll drop the writer of the album Lover's Rock. Since I'm already vetoed,
I'll drop Je T'aime.
No, don't. That was going to be my favorite.
I can't drop Isaac Hayes, and you can't
drop Isaac Hayes
either, basically. I'm going to have to drop either one of them eventually, so I suppose.
And if push comes to shove, I would go for Bowie.
And that makes it easy.
All of the elements. Yeah.
Because to me, it's a toss up between Bowie and Isaac Hayes. I'm definitely close enough. Isaac Hayes is great for me, and it's an obvious thing. But for me, if I think of my personally, that I would identify most with, basically, obviously, is Bowie, because I'm not some big black sort of soul singer at all, basically. I'm a sort of weedy Anglo-speaking musician.
And also, it's the least, not the least, but it's not an obvious choice. Yeah. I like that. If I would be at somebody's place and they would put on Your Love is King, I'd think, not sure. Whereas the Bowie song, I would think, that's interesting. So there we go.
Yes, it's a good point, David. Right. It'll show that the person that put some thought into it about who you are as a person, basically.
Yeah.
All right, that was quite easily resolved in the end, as often as these often are. Gary, can I just say, it's a real thrill for us to have you on our little podcast. Thank you so much for doing it. And it was a great discussion. I think we covered a lot of ground. It was too much fun.
And I hope your album does really well.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic that you produced an album.
We look at the formal release probably in beginning September, I think, because it wouldn't work out. And then we are looking to come down and do some gigs in Cape Town once the album's released. So hopefully we'll see you guys down there.
All right. And we'll put references, obviously, to the album in the show notes. And just to remind you, if you've listened this long, that the full versions of the songs are on Spotify and Apple Music. So you can listen to them all in their full glory. And please do follow us on the Twitters and all of the socials. And you can also email us on perfectsong4@gmail.com. Come. All right, Fred, what are we doing next? I think it's your turn to choose.
I thought we go very basic next time. This was basic as well, but I thought the perfect song for a Saturday night.
Okay.
That's a pretty good one.
Gearing up to go out.
Yeah.
As you're preparing, as you're getting ready.
So
you're putting on your lipstick and you're heading up.
Exactly. Your diamonds and fur coat.
Okay. All right. No, that sounds absolutely cool.
Okay.
Good.
All right, guys, let's go out with Wild as the Wind. Let me.